Good morning, everyone. Surrey County Board of County Commissioners meeting will now come to order. Anyone has any cell phones or any other audible devices, if you would silence them now as not to disrupt the meeting, we'd appreciate it. If you stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Next up on the agenda is item 3, this is discussion and possible action and approval of the agenda for June the 19th, 2018. Mr. Whitten, do we have any changes to make to the agenda?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Based on the sage advice of our Deputy District Attorney's Legal Counsel, we would like to remove item number 15 from the agenda that is by statute under the jurisdiction of the Canyon GID, and I advise the Chairman, their director, and Mr. Minkler of that.
So. All right. Any other changes?
No, sir.
Very good. Is there any public comment regarding today's agenda? Hearing none, if I get a motion to approve.
I'll make a motion to approve today's agenda for June 19, 2018, noting that we will delete item 15.
I'll second.
We moved and seconded to approve today's meeting with the changes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right, motion carries unanimously. Move along now to item number 4, discussion and possible action, approval of the minutes for February the 6th, 2018. Is there any public comment regarding those minutes? Hearing none, if I can get a motion to approve.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes for February 6th, 2018.
Second.
Moved and seconded to approve the minutes of February the 6th. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right, motion carries unanimously. On to item number 5. Discussion and possible action, approval of the minutes for May the 15th, 2018. So any public comment regarding these minutes? Hearing none, I get a motion to approve.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes for May 15th, 2018.
I'll second.
Moved and seconded to approve the minutes of May the 15th. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. On now to item number 6, discussion and possible action, approval of the minutes for May the 21st, 2018. Any public comments regarding these minutes? Hearing none, I get a motion to approve.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes for May 21st, 2018.
Second.
Moved and seconded to approve the minutes of May the 21st. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. On to item number 7. This is today's consent agenda. Is there any public comment regarding today's consent agenda? Hearing none, I get a motion to approve.
I'll make a motion to approve today's consent agenda.
I'll second.
Moved and seconded to approve today's consent agenda. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion carries unanimously. Moving along now to item number 8. This is discussion only. We'll take no action or public comment. These are committee and staff reports. Start on the right side of this room with Sheriff Antonoro.
Just one thing quickly for informational purposes. Last week we held some training down at the Industrial Center. It was put together with a number of the area businesses down there. I don't have a full list of who attended. Tesla was a co-sponsor of it, but we had it there at the government building. They went over active assailant training with all the different security people down there. So. Just informational thing, working with our security partners down there in the park and around the state. There were people from all over that came in for that. I think there were about 30 attendees from all across the area. So if you have any questions, that's all I've got.
Okay. Thank you. All right. We go on to project coordinator for repair work on our government buildings from the storm damage from the last year. Is Mike Orthan?
Morning, Commissioners. Quick update for you. Mike Northam for the record.
Got carpet cleaning coming up in the DA's office. We think the 7th, I'll be coordinating with DA's office personnel. See if that's going to work for them. The 25th, we are scheduled for paint in the chambers. Get the ceilings painted up. Plaster ceilings came out wonderfully, so we're going to get them painted up. Following that will be wallpaper. It's going to be happening during the week of the 25th. That's also going to include the painting the ceiling of the break room, the touch-up in the clerk's office, and we're going to be getting some professional opinions on how to deal with these marks here that you see in the courtroom. Special considerations there. So we're going to get some professional input on how we should move forward on those. Piper's Opera House window restoration work is ongoing with the windows. I don't have much to report on that. I'll keep you advised as that proceeds. Final item was the OSHA 30 class. About 12 of us in the county are now certified through OSHA. We have a 30-hour OSHA certification, which makes us competent supervisors for construction work. And I would say that you're going to see a new safety culture emerging in Virginia City and in Story County, which I think is only good. Any questions, sirs? Any
questions for Mike?
Good.
Thanks, Mike. Okay, today we have representatives from River District. Mary Lee Miller and her husband John, have you got a report for us today, Mary Lee?
Good morning, commissioners, Pat, staff. Thank you for recognizing us after all this time. Life got in front of us. We had several tragedies in 9 months, personal tragedies. But we are recovering. We're back. We expect to attend several meetings in the future here. As far as the community building goes, we were given new computers, new monitors. Those have been installed. We had something happen yesterday that I'm going to leave for Sherry to elaborate on. But anyway, that's where we stand at the building there. So we've enjoyed the last several meetings we've attended and hope to attend some more. And thank you so much.
Thank you, Mary Lee. Welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. Next up, John Miller.
John Miller from the River District, representing Louise Perry Park and the community garden there in the Lockwood area. I'd like to thank all the commissioners, especially Lance Gilman for his generous donation for our park equipment. It has really set up the park. And ask Mr. Jack McGuffey, he was up there, he's seen it. It's really nice. Thank you, Lance. I'd like to thank Jason and his crew for an outstanding job. Anytime I needed anything at the park or at the community garden, they're Johnny on the spot. I would like to thank them very much. The park is looking beautiful. Our flower bed that I planted last year is really coming up. I'm planning on planting 3 more flower beds and planting 5 more trees that have been donated from our community. Bob and Lisa Holman had donated 5 trees. We're going to put them up. Mr. Pat Whitten, I gave you a fax about our basketball court and our sign. And if I remember, recollect right, Jason did the last sign. Right, Jason? I love the sign. It's just starting to deteriorate. I wish we'd get them fixed. The community garden has been cleaned up, and it's been very hard this year because the weeds were terrible this year. But we've got it pretty well cleaned up. Jason's working on the water system over there right now. We have a little pressure, but we're getting it all cleaned up. And, folks, it's moving ahead, and we're doing a good job. So I'd like to thank all of you, all the commissioners, all the staff, for all your kind help for me and the community of River District. Thank you. Any questions?
The park is looking great. I think the only eyesore left is that basketball court. So
correct.
Get that refinished, and it's going to look 100.
It's being used by the kids, and I just don't want the county to get any liable for someone getting hurt on that. You know how everybody likes to use lawyers. Excuse me, Keith. Use lawyers in bad ways. So if that gets cleared up with the new gardens and the new plantings, I believe this can be the best park in Story County.
Yeah.
So thank you.
May I?
Yeah, go ahead.
John, before you leave, I want to thank both you and Mary Lee for being, you know, our eyes and ears out there often, at least mine, and sometimes Sherry's when Sherry doesn't get out. I appreciate the email I got yesterday from the Heads Up. The email, just for everybody's reference, questioned two things. One is, why is there a huge dumpster there that we're looking at to find out? We couldn't, we don't know. Public Works didn't order it. Sherry didn't order it. I didn't order it. So we'll be talking to the fine folks at Waste Management and say, who does this belong to? And if you see no need for it, we'll get it out of there.
We have one other problem. Someone had parked a big trailer there. And I have already contacted the Sheriff's Department. I think we've given them plenty of time. And I'm going to talk to the Sheriff, and maybe we can red tag it and get it out of there. Because it's been there 3 months, folks. And it's like you say, it's on Story County property. Anything goes wrong with it.
You bet. And then relative to your information on the signs that are now appearing on Perry Ranch Road, Jason was out there early this morning, bright and early. Texted me before 6 a.m. We've got pictures, and both Austin and our chief deputy district attorney are looking at it from a legal basis as far as, you know, we've always maintained, sheriff has agreed, fire chief has agreed that we definitely need that road as a secondary ingress egress for everybody. We need a road pass. So that's being worked on. Thanks to you guys.
Well, thank you, and I know Jason was out there at 6 this morning. He came and saw me in the park. So thank you, folks. Is there any other questions?
Thank you, John. You and your crew do a great job down there. Thank you.
We had help from everybody here.
All right, next up, we have our IT director, James Dean. Thank you. The battalion chief, Ron Atkins, from the fire department.
Good morning. I'm here for Chief Nevin and the Big Cheese for about a week and a half while he's out of state. So, just a couple things. First of all, fire season's here. You guys have probably seen some smoke columns come out of Carson. There was a fire in Lyon County a couple days ago. We've had engine crews on both those fires. We had a 57.5-acre wildland fire in Lockwood. A couple weeks ago, a week and a half ago. So just heads up on that. So then we did start weeding around VC a little bit with some crews. We're going to be finishing that as soon as we get some crews back off of some of these fires. Of course, those take precedent over some of the weeding that we need to have done. So as soon as we get done with that, we will continue some weeding around town and what we do need to do down in Lockwood as well. And then one more thing. During the chili cook-off, I wanted to mention this. We had a running event at the same time. A lot of people in town, really congested. One of the runners went down, heart attack, full arrest on the south end of town, right in the middle of C Street. And when we got there, there was a local lady on the Tahoe House Hotel banister yelling profanity specifically at me, saying we took too long. And it really upset me, and the crew, of course. And this was in front of a whole packed town. And I mention this because I did confront communications and got our times. It was a little over 4 minutes by the time 911 was called and the time we got on scene. And the gentleman is going to make a full recovery. He's going to walk out of the hospital. He's going to come back up, finish the run, and then, of course, thank us. But I just wanted to mention that. That it was important, and it was a stressful day that day. I don't know if anybody was in town during the chili cook-off. There was a lot going on. There was a lot of cars parked. There was a lot of people in town. It was tough to get in and around that stuff. So I just wanted to mention that he's going to make a full recovery on that. And just some quick statistics for the year. We're at a total of 1,005 calls per year. Wednesday mornings are our busiest days. I don't know why, it's just this way it is. It's just an interesting statistic to share with you guys. And that's all I have, unless you guys have any questions.
Yeah. So, you know, downtown gets closed off quite often now for our special events.
And yeah, I can see where you have difficulty getting in and out of there. Do you think, have you thought of maybe setting up like a first aid or first response station there in the heart to
Busy events we do, yeah. Grand Prix weekend, sometimes street vibes. If we know we're going to have something on the south end of town going on, we have something staffed on it. And, yeah. We don't expect the chili cook-off to be as busy as that was, you know.
Yeah.
It's just with parking on D Street and then the sewer projects and the construction going on B Street, it was one half dozen or the other on which way to get there, which way was going to be faster, you know. So I thought it was relative.
Well, with the great job Danny's been doing with our events, I mean, they've all grown tremendously, and so I think it's probably good to have a visible station there in case anybody needs some help. So that's my suggestion. That's all.
Quick question. Of your calls on an average monthly, do you have a feel for what percentage are EMT, what percentage are actually fire calls?
Fires... this is just last month. Fires, we went to 9 fires last month, 164 EMS calls. Virginia City had 58 incidents. The Highlands had 35. Lockwood had 36. And Station 75, the North Ship had 59 incidents. And that was just last month. I don't have it for the entire year this time, but that's just...
So it sounds like by far the largest are EMT medical calls.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's always 95% EMS.
You guys do a great job of that.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
You do. Yeah. From the time that, referring back to your med call on the heart attack, from the time that the 911 call goes in for you to man the equipment and get on scene in 4 minutes, I think that's pretty good timing, whether there was an event going on or not. So.
Yeah, it was good time.
Yeah, and his family immediately posted after he survived that he wants to come back and finish the race. So.
Yeah. And he was a retired fire captain out of Washington, which made it even better. You know, so he was part of our family as well.
Yeah.
3 years to have a save like that. Thanks, Ron.
Thank you.
All right. Next up, we have the director of the Virginia City Tourism Commission, Jane Dodson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Denny Dodson, Tourism Director. Ron, the response that you guys did was amazing. The family contacted us personally and could not thank us enough on saving their father's life. He is actually a nurse, the son, and started the CPR on his father. And, you know, all of our event coordination leading up to that, we've talked about safety issues, safety plans with the fire department and the sheriff's office, and we open up barricades. We move people to get them in and out, and it was a hats off to the fire department for saving that man's life. So it was a great experience there. Not, you know, obviously it was stressful, but it was a great outcome. And he doesn't want to come up, and we're gonna make a media event out of it if we get him to come back up and finish the race. So stay tuned on that. One of the biggest events of the year is coming up shortly, 4th of July. Each year we raise about $28,000 to put that event on. Majority of it's fireworks. We cover the parade, we cover the stage and restrooms, that kind of stuff. This year we are running a little bit short. You know, it's we're probably right around $10,000 short with a couple weeks to go. But you know, we do appreciate the many businesses and community leaders and residents that have contributed already, but just want to make everybody aware that we run a little behind on this one. There's no chance of canceling the event, obviously, but it's one of those things that it's a kind of a grassroots effort. There's no commission paid on it. It's just a total benefit for the town, kind of a pass-through, so we appreciate all those donations. I know Katie's going to mention a little bit later on the agenda about Pipers, but I just wanted to mention that Whitney there is doing a great job coordinating that. Our website's up, the branding's right, the advertising started, the calendar is completely full. And then here shortly we'll be starting to give an opportunity for folks to visit the Slammer in conjunction with her tours at Pipers. They're going to open up on weekends downstairs so people can experience that museum on one of our busiest weekends. And then finally, the V&T is in full steam right now ahead. So they're doing great. One of our best weekends ever. This is last weekend for Father's Day. The crew has really got it up and running. There is a schedule that's out. It's not absolutely every weekend. There are a few weekends where they take off, where it conflicts with bigger things that are going on in the region. Kind of makes sense, like Civil War days, that type of weekend. But overall, it's a great schedule. A lot of theme trains between the long line and the short line. I encourage everybody to go online, check it out, and go have some fun.
Depending on your fireworks, my companies will pledge another $5,000 your way. So you're only $5,000 short.
Thank you, Lance. No, you've already been very generous. And thank you, Will.
Great. Yeah. Thank you, Dave. Next up, we have our community relations manager, partner, director, Sherry Hannon.
Good morning, Sherry Nevin for the record. I just wanted to provide you with a brief update on the federal highway funding for Six Mile Canyon that we've spoke to you about probably over the last year. At this time, we've kind of done a lot of sitting down, looking at the cost, looking at the benefit of this project, and we are recommending not moving forward with this source of funding. We have come up against many roadblocks related to this project. Those are scheduling, permitting, environmental clearances, and generally a lot of red tape related to this source of federal funding. We have a pretty short window with the federal funding to complete the project, and we're just not sure that it's going to be worth it in the long run. So it is our intention with the project to improve the roadway to help mitigate future events. You know, we see every time we get something down there that's significant, it shuts down the road for an extended period of time. And we've got, you know, a lot of cars that use that roadway on a daily basis, not to mention school buses, you know, commuter traffic and such. This grant funding is very specific in what is considered betterment versus NDOT current design standards. So if we're going to do a project, we of course want to make it better. So Jason and I met with the folks from Federal Highways. We've had several meetings with them and NDOT over the course of the last year, specifically within the last few months here. And there's a lot of gray areas in what's considered betterment versus design standards. So it's got, like I said, very tight parameters to it. From the standpoint, you know, we sat down and we looked at the cost-benefit, and there's just too many strings attached. We'll continue to work with Far West, and if you drive down 6 Mile, you'll notice that they've got some areas down there that they've marked out for surveying, and those are the areas that we are of concern to us, that, you know, we see every time we get an event down there have issues. So we're going to look at some design ideas to see if we can complete some of these areas with our own staff and equipment. We think that we've got a pretty good project, you know, but like I said, we want to make sure that we make some improvements to the road to make it better. So that's kind of where we're at. I mean, it's a hard decision. I mean, we've gone back and forth. We sat down with Pat, and that's kind of, you know, I mean, you look at some of these sources of federal funding. We've looked at CDBG over the years, and, you know, yeah, it's federal money, but sometimes it just gets down to a point where it's really not worth it. So, you know, if we didn't have many other projects going on, you know, we've got a couple USDA large projects going on and others, you know, projects within the county. So that's kind of where we're at with this right now. So any questions?
I'd like to jump in if I can. Timing sometimes is everything, and with the NDOT state deputy director in the audience, I want to be very clear and have Sherry validate our friends in this process have been NDOT consistently. They brought the opportunity to us. They helped us through the process. I won't say that some of us sensed that NDOT may have been equally frustrated, but the issues, the bureaucracy and everything were definitely not at the state level. Sometimes federal money has so many strings and encumbrances that it just may not be worth it, or it may not be doable. So, again, to be very clear, NDOT's been a huge help with us on this.
Fantastic, yeah. Specifically, Kirsten, she's been fantastic to work with. So, and your gentleman with the environmental, we've really enjoyed working with those folks. So please pass that along to them. And that's all I have.
All right. Thanks, Sherry. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Next up, we have the County Fire Marshal, Martin Azevedo.
That's
okay. Thank you, Martin. Director of the Community Chest and the Library, Eric Schill.
Good morning, everybody. For the record, Eric Schoen, Executive Director of Community Chest and Story County Library. Just a few updates for all of you. Our summer youth program is in full swing now at the center from 7 until 6 with all of our youth from pre-K through middle school. If you come by, you'll see a lot of kids running around either inside or outside. We use the park as well and the swimming pool. And it's really fun to see the center full of life. It's what we were working for all these years, so if you have a chance, I invite you to come down. Even if you just want to watch from the library upstairs, I want to remind folks that we have the Story County Library is open. I will ask for some patience as we staff up and we get our systems in place. It's not as many hours as I'd like to have it open from 10 to 2, essentially Monday through Friday. We are looking for funding to the point of state federal funding. It is difficult sometimes to decide which funding streams are worth accepting, but we are open Monday through Friday, generally 10 to 2. In the Story County Library, and you have a wonderful view of the kids' programs down below. It's kind of a fun environment. We also have coffee available, and we're working on having regular nibbles, like muffins and things of that sort. And then also, I wanted to give you some good news about Wednesdays. The medical clinic, part of the reason for the bigger space, was so we could move the library out of the old space. And the medical clinic now on Wednesdays, anytime I go by the waiting room, it's full. People are really utilizing the medical clinic the way it was designed to be used, receiving primary health care services, so that's exciting to see as well. So that's it. Any questions?
You just need to have a full-time root beer float stand.
We'll work on that, Jack.
I thought the white wine was a nice one.
Right. Yeah, we could do both. Maybe a white wine, root beer, I don't know how that would work, but yeah.
Thank you, Eric.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Eric.
And the largest public works project that's ongoing is the wastewater lines throughout the city. And Mike Nevin's project coordinator on that.
Good morning, commissioners. For the record, Mike Nevin. Project coordinator. There's actually three infrastructure projects that I'll talk briefly about this morning. The biggest one, as Chairman McBride mentioned, is of course the ongoing sewer improvement project in Virginia City. Sherry has put up the current map with the highlighted areas, our areas of completed work. It's a little fuzzy today, and we don't know why, but at any rate, it's always good to show it visually, I think, and we apologize for the not the clearest picture, but anyway, just the update, we're 37 weeks into the project. We have 150 days left to substantial completion. Project status... Oh, thank you, Austin. A little bit better.
Engineering adjustment.
I was going to make an appointment with the eye doctor today. But anyway, that looks good. Thank you. As of last week, we have installed 34,500 linear feet of mainline pipe. That's 6.5 miles. 173 manholes have been installed and 315 service connections throughout the community. We're status is 68% complete overall. That's with the funding involved, and there are a couple week lag in there. By pipe, 75%, so that's huge. And we're currently working up Mill Street. As everyone is probably well aware, we have Mill Street closed from D to R with a detour workaround for the commute traffic coming up either Washington or Union. And that's you know, an unfortunate, but that's what it is. Mill Street will be open for the 4th of July. It will be able to be traveled. The crew will not work the 4th, 5th, or 6th. They'll be off from the 4th through the end of that week. So, you know, a lot of people are traveling on the weekends and such. The other piece that we're currently working on is the bottom of I Street, I guess you would call it. It's kind of where Al and I come together in the tailings down there from the Savage Works. And then we'll be working up through the fairgrounds where the existing line is, replacing that and tying that into the piece that we did underneath the railroad tracks before Tom started the season back at the end of May. And then once that piece is in, we'll move on the other side of the cut over there near the rail shop building, finish that line up and around Tunnel Road. We have the bore in already underneath the highway there at 341 to go to the parking lot at the detention facility there, and then get that tied in and then march up Sheldon off the highway there to the top of the divide. Today we've got crews that are prepping that piece of Carson Street in front of the swimming pool to get that patched in there. We have a piece from G to H in front of the community center that is going to get repaved, and then we're prepping for the overlay of A Street, Sutton from Howard to B, and Carson from the top at the end of the pavement to C. We're looking at a couple of areas on both Mill and Carson for some upgrade to drainage issues that have been occurring for years and years. And with the help of the Ames superintendent, you know, we're not going to be able to do 100% solve all, but, you know, if we can make it, you know, 75% better than it is, you know, that's a big plus in the project. So we know there's, as I mentioned, usually every month, the inconvenience to some of the residents and the traveling public, but, you know, it is what it is, and we'll be out of here soon, I think, ahead of schedule. It's appearing that way, so that's a good thing. Any questions on the wastewater side of things before I give you a little update on the other two projects?
Go ahead, Mike.
Okay. The 5-mile transmission line project, which is basically replacing the water line from the 5-mile reservoir and storage tank to about a mile south on Ophir Grade, was advertised, let for bid on the 2nd of June. Bid opening is the 28th of the month, almost the end of the month. Tomorrow we have a mandatory pre-bid on-site conference in the afternoon, so the bidders must attend that, and it's basically to give them an idea on the terrain, their requirements as we see them out there. We have, as Battalion Chief Adkins mentioned, fire season is in full swing, you know, taking safety precautions along the route out there. The biggest concern that we're going to have out there is the closure of a portion of that Ophir Grade road until the pipeline is installed along, it's about a mile and a half distance in there. So that'll be a something we'll have to deal with as well, and we're going to discuss that tomorrow. Any questions on the 5-mile project? And we hope to get that on the agenda for your approval of the bid on the 3rd of July, 2844. So we'll probably, you know, have the information, the agenda item has been requested, but the bid result will be, you know, hopefully done that day or the next day on Friday, and then we'll get it out and show it out to you. So we've done that before on projects. The last one is the Gold Hill Septic project. And that project, we're doing a HECRAS modeling. It was required by NDEP to make certain there was a negligible discharge into the Carson River Basin. When we first ran the software, it was detecting, the air detection was kind of throwing a big skew into the process, so we had to go to a little bit different method as far as the analysis, but it's just as valid. So this week they're preparing the internal draft of the information regarding this flow, but I will make mention that it's pretty much unmeasurable, even with a flood event, a 25-year event, you're talking 0.002% that, you know, you might get some detect in that Carson River Basin. An animal sitting in the river down there is going to have more of an impact than a packaged sewer plant sitting up in Gold Hill, in other words, so pretty negligible. But anyway, NDEP will be preparing an administrative order of consent that will follow once they get these results, and then we'll take action on that and develop our plan to accommodate that order. So that process is ongoing and moving along just fine. So those are my updates.
Any questions for Mike?
No.
Very good, Mike. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, next up we have the director of the Story County Senior Citizen Center, Stacey Gilbert.
Good morning, Stacey Gilbert for the record. Just a few updates. The 28th and the 29th, we will be closed for parking lot paving. And right now, Sherry and I are in the beginning of putting together a strategic plan group. It's the early, early stages. So hopefully we'll have a strategic plan for everybody to review. I don't know, end of this year, beginning of next. And we received a $10,000 grant from the state for a transportation program. So we're looking for a part-time employee. Any questions?
No. That's great. Sounds short and sweet. Thank you, Stacey. All right, our Public Works Director, Jason Wiesbecki.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Jason Wiesbecki for the record. Just a couple items to follow up on what Stacy had said. We're doing a lot of prep and fixing a lot of drainage issues at the senior center slash park parking lot up here and getting ready to pave that on the 28th and 29th, as well as an area of the Mark Twain parking lot in front of the Veterans Memorial that they built. And another thing following up on what Mike said, too, that OSHA 30 class that we did with the county was a real eye-opener and, you know, brought a lot of great resources in for us. So, any questions?
Is the parking area of the Highlands, the mailboxes, is that still on your to-do list?
All right, thank you.
Yep.
It looks like you must have received your spray painting equipment for the curbing.
Yep.
It's a noticeable difference.
Oh, it's a huge difference.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you, Jason.
No problem.
Next up, we have our planning director, Austin Osborne. And HR director. And what else do you want to be director of today?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be brief. Just for the public to let them know on the June 21st will be our next Planning Commission meeting. We're having another sign ordinance workshop. We're not rushing through the sign ordinances. We should have had this on the board quite a while ago, but we really want to make sure that people in the community, particularly businesses in Virginia City, are happy with what they're going to get. So we're still receiving comments and suggestions on that. Pat and I met with, actually with Jason W. as well, the AT&T for installation of the cell tower on the south end of Virginia City. That project is still moving forward pretty well. They're just looking for a site, and over there by the ice house and the public works yard, it looks like probably the best site for a line of sight and other reasons. They're probably going to opt for a water tower type of a design. That'll be historically appropriate, look like it's wood and all that. They will be going to the Comstock Historic District, of course, so to have that reviewed and considered, and a special use permit be required from this board for consideration of the tower exceeding 45 feet. So it is moving forward. The same group is still working on the monopine installation of antennas out in the Highlands for broadband and cellular. So that project is still moving forward as expected, and about midsummer to October is about the time that those facilities both should become live. Kind of generally, just to let you know, our team, including me and Pat, have been really looking at transportation issues in the area, whether it's Tahoe-Reno Industrial Center or Lockwood or here in Virginia City, and been collaborating quite a bit with folks like NDOT who are here that are doing regional transportation studies and trying to get regional folks here in different counties to cooperate and coordinate with each other on not just road infrastructure, but also on busing and potential bus stops and transit centers and van pools, whatever it might be, really to the benefit of the area. And down at Washoe RTC, Lee Gibson, the director down there, and Pat and me have been talking quite a bit with his team. There seems to be a very consistent focus between us, NDOT, and RTC on what is needed for the region as far as planning, but also looking at transit and things like that. We want to plan for it. We want to be smart. And really that's going to tie into the next thing that we might bring to you all in the next coming meetings, is to possibly reinstate our Story County Regional Transportation Commission, which would consist of two board members and then one member from the public at large in the county, somebody who has interest in transportation and transportation-related issues. At this point, I'm working on some policy updates. Keith, in your office, he'll look at those, make sure we're compliant with the NRS, and put that together, and then ultimately propose whether this board would like to take that direction or not. Some benefits of having a local RTC: it doesn't create bureaucracy, it doesn't create departments. It just enables this board, through a different venue, to look at coordinating with regional transportation in Washoe County, NDOT, and other organizations for transportation, better connecting with funding and grants, things like Tiger funds and things like that, or Tiger grants, that might bring some money our way to be able to do some projects. And then really the most important is really to make sure our direction will be focused on things that we really need. How do we get those things done and not create waste? And so that, of course, would be subject to board approval. And last but not least, the lands bill has been attached to a national defense bill, which I think is a good idea. It worked in the first time, and that bill is moving forward in Congress with the help of our Porter group, with John and Dan and his team, as well as with the teams of Amity's office, Heller's office, Senator Masto's office, and all of them. So we're really optimistic that that lands bill will be able to move forward and we'll be able to resolve issues for folks that are living in this community for their homes. That's it.
Any questions for Austin?
Thank you,
Austin.
Great. Thanks, Austin. Next up, over at the Comptroller's Office, Mr. Gallagher.
Nothing at this time, Mr. Chairman.
Special Counsel, Mr. Morse.
Thank you.
All right. Chief Deputy, Mr. Willis.
Keith Loomis, Assistant Attorney's Office. I just want to bring you up to date on a couple things. First is that in the beginning of May, the Federal District Court decided, issued its final decision on the Sutro Springs roadway, upholding it as an RS 2477 road. The time to appeal that decision expired at the beginning of June. The no appeal was taken, so that's a final decision at this point. We had the lawsuit that was brought by M&M LLC regarding the issuance of a marijuana operations permit. That has been decided by the Nevada Supreme Court, and they upheld the action of this board in denying that permit. So that also is a final decision. The last thing that we received is recently Vanessa Stevens was served with a lawsuit from International Investments in her capacity as clerk treasurer and tax collector. This is a suit in which the International Investments is essentially seeking to quiet title to the Perry Ranch property and the Old Bridge Ranch property as one unit. I don't really think the county is opposed to that quiet title, but there are some past due taxes that are related to that, and we have filed an answer in response to the lawsuit on behalf of Vanessa. That's my report.
Great. Any questions for Keith? No. Great. Thank you, Mr. Holmes. Thank you. All right. County Manager, Pat Whitten.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A handful of things. We do have still two active economic development projects being worked on. I'm going to pass the baton during board comment to Commissioner Gilman to speak on an update on opportunity zones. And if I need to fill any blanks in, I'll follow his lead. Also, the effluent pipeline project is alive and is proceeding very slowly. As you'll recall, you approved a number of legal documents over the past several meetings. A deposit has been tendered. And that allows us to continue to engage both financial advisors, bond counsel, as well as two other key folks in the process, an engineer through Far West and also an appraiser, which happens to be, I'm going to draw a total blank on our appraiser, but it's the gentleman that we have, Mark Stafford, that we use on all of our industrial park properties on the Allen Trot. So that's moving forward. I just want to remind everybody, I'll do this one more time on July 3rd, but we do have a meeting on July 3rd, the day before the 4th of July. We do not have a meeting on July 17th. That was approved at the last meeting. Mike Northern mentioned OSHA 30, and hats off to Jason and really everybody, Austin and everybody that went. The feedback that I got, anytime somebody mentions an OSHA class, they kind of cringe. And that was not the case this time around. Whoever the instructor was must have been amazing. I heard that, you know, on breaks we had, you know, some of our various departments talking both together and internally about improvements they could make. This stuff's going to be transferred over, I think, to our safety committee, you know, for consideration and action as well. And you know, I think Mike used the phrase, but, you know, look forward to a whole new safety-focused, safety-conscious culture, you know, particularly with our field workers that are out there every day. So Jason's wearing the new fashion statement, the yellow vest, and that'll probably be something that, you know, you'll see a lot of us in from time to time. Last is kind of a fun story. Denny and I had a chance to sit down with the folks at NDOW, Nevada Department of Wildlife. They needed help on something that in previous years when he still had the lands under his control. Mr. Gilman was very helpful with the bighorn sheep. Now we need to talk to new folks like Google and blockchains and everybody. And in that meeting, I mentioned our great horned owl that's been in the possession of the federal government for over a year. And the fact that we were getting nowhere fast. And within one day of that meeting, a federal fish and wildlife agent called me and said, I still have him. He's still in the freezer. He's yours. Just get a taxidermist with all the federal permits and everything. So I'm going through that process. Apparently, there aren't very many federal taxidermists that want to mess with all the requirements that go with that. But Denny and I are working on that together. So that's my report, Mr. Chair.
Great. Thanks, Pat. County Clerk, Ms. Stevens, nothing today.
One more, if I may. Just for point of reference in correspondence section of there, I know the talk in many situations in town this week, at least in Virginia City, has been the hill climb and Denny's recommendation and my decision not to approve it this year. There is in correspondence a communication from me
that explains what we think are the true facts of the story, as opposed to, in some cases, some either misstatements or half-statements that were out there. Denny's office has, Denny and Katie have a great packet of information that has emails. This was as a result of a public records request that was tendered on this matter. So if anybody needs anything, the reaction I'm getting so far after people read that is, how come you approved it the last couple of years? So not a decision to be taken lightly when we cancel an event, that's for sure. But sometimes, again, just like federal free money, the risk is not taken. The reward isn't there worth the risk that we'd have to take. Yes, thank you.
Thanks, Pat.
That's not to say that they can hold their own event, is it?
They can't in the county. It would be sanctioned as a special event. NDOT wanted a pre-closure of the road unless the sheriff would agree. The sheriff has said he's going to follow, you know, our desires. So they have to find another place. But you asked a great question, Vice Chairman McGuffey, and that is, we've been asked, does that mean never again? And I would probably tell you right now, having been burnt up to three times by the current organizers and promoters, I'd be hard-pressed to imagine that we'd do it with them. But if there was another organization that wanted to bring it to us that was more safety-conscious, long story short, I wish Chief Atkins was still here. We darn near sent an ambulance on a hot track because of miscommunications, and that's just a cardinal sin, in my opinion. But we're not saying no to future events. But there'd have to be some work and hopefully a new organizer. And then we'd love to have it.
Thank you.
Great. All right. Thanks, Pat. That concludes the committee and staff reports. Move on down to item number 9. These are board comments. We'll take no action or public comment. Sit down at the far end of the table here. Mr. Gilman.
As Pat Whitten suggested, I'll give a brief overview on the opportunity zones, otherwise known as the O-zones. The tax bill that was approved in Washington and issued in January had a section in it that allowed census tracts that were qualified nationally in each state to be identified as an opportunity zone. And it was based on census tract information. I believe Nevada was approximately approved for 270 potential. excuse me. Out of that, Governor Sandoval had the ability to name 60 opportunity zones. And the issue with an opportunity zone is that it attracts a lot of stranded capital that's available for investment in various communities, but the capital needs to come in under special circumstances. And a matter of fact, the Treasury is still creating the rules and regs that will follow along with the bill. But what it'll do here for Story County, as an example, is a lot of the cryptocurrency that is stranded today, because we are associated closely with blockchains, and as you probably know, they own somewhere in the neighborhood of 70,000 acres in Story County, they're in a prime position to attract literally billions and billions of dollars of stranded investment capital that's in that cryptocurrency. So unfortunately, in the first approvals, Story County was overlooked, and Lyon County got a significant share, and others, but unfortunately Story County, although we qualified, were overlooked as a consideration. So a team of folks, and you know, I'll leave out some, but I'll tell you, a team of folks got very, very busy working with the county governments and at the federal level with the Treasury, and it was a it was an outstanding effort on behalf of everyone. But I would suggest and point out first that Pat Whitten, our county manager, and Jeff Page, the county manager there in Lyon County, were sterling representatives of and worked together to balance this inequity so that Story County could have an opportunity zone as well as Lyon County. So beyond that, Rob Hooper at NNDA, many of you may be aware of the NNDA efforts, he signed on board. And with Jeff Page supporting the effort. And then you all have heard here in this room John Porter. John Porter is some folks back in Washington, ex-Congressman Porter. And he and his staff got busy in Washington along with Dean Heller and others. And so they worked at the Treasury side of the issue on the federal level. And then Governor Sandoval stepped to the plate. And with the blessings and the written approvals from both counties, he submitted a request to the Treasury that we be reconsidered for an opportunity zone here in Story County. And so that was successful. We were named the opportunity zone. We actually traded a very small opportunity zone in Dayton, and that was then traded. Lyon County agreed to forego that, although they have a significant amount of opportunity zones still on their file. But that allowed much of Story County to come in as an opportunity zone. So tremendous opportunity. We'll see bear the fruit of our actions here in the next 4 or 5 years. But truly an incredible event to attract a lot of capital here in our economic development program. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Lance. Commissioner McGuffey.
Rare moment. I don't have anything to say.
That is a rare moment. Okay, I don't have too much, except I want to go ahead and give a lot of credit to our local tourism director, Denny, and his crew. We're off to the races. I mean, it is the visitor season, the tourist season. It starts pretty much on St. Patrick's Day, but we've had two special events since our last regular meeting, and the town is busy, and it's unseasonably busy this early in June. So, several years ago, before tourism was involved, that department was involved in hosting special events. It was all done by volunteers and a small committee of business owners. And since it's been turned over to tourism, it's just exploded. I remember when I was involved with Angela Petrini and others of putting on these events, we'd hire promoters and they'd say, you've got to do more. You've got to do more. We need more events because that's what really is the bread and butter for this business district. And now the merchants are going, man, you guys got to slow down. It says, we're so busy, we hardly get any time off. And so it's a good problem to have right now for the business district to be that busy. So anyway, Denny and your crew, congratulations on all the hard work and effort you guys are doing. And the business district really does appreciate your hard work and effort on making this stuff work. So have we lost anybody in the last 2 weeks that we need to make mention of?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. Very good. All right, that concludes the board comments, and we're going to move on now to item number 10. This is discussion and possible action. Acceptance of renewal proposal from the Nevada Public Agency Insurance Pool, also known as Pool, and approved for payment for the fiscal year of the 2018-2019 funds. And in attendance today, we have Bradley Pierce, and Carol Ingalls, and Alan Galt. So, Hugh, are you going to take the lead on this, or who takes the lead on this?
I think we can maybe kick off with Carol and
Carol.
Yeah, Alan can. We did pass out this.
Yeah. Why? Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Carol Ingalls, for the record. And before I get into the insurance, I just have to take a moment to commend this board and the department heads. I grew up in this town, and there was a time when the Fourth Ward School was a place you could go and play and knock the boards aside down at the basement windows, and you could crawl inside, and you could leave your mark on the blackboard. The hospital was a place for the Easter egg hunt. The Piper's Opera House was a scary place. Crabby lady lived next door, and she'd scream at you if you tried to cut across her property to get from B Street to A Street. And there was no train. If there was a senior center, that would be any of the places between the Crystal Bar and Gordon Lane's Union Brewery. And there certainly was no community center, and there was no swimming pool. And over the course of time, and I know many boards, it has all come to fruition, but this board has really shined a light on these landmarks and given them purpose and put phenomenal people in charge of handling them and promoting them and keeping them alive and well as a destination unto themselves. So I just wanted to compliment you and thank you. Now, the really fun part is the insurance. This year, Pool Pack overall increase in the rates was about 6.4%, and the county was, where's my letter? We were a little bit higher. And when I say a little bit higher, I'm going to say, excuse me just a minute, because I have to find that. Did I give you my packet? Thank you. I'm so excited about the accomplishments. Anyway, the overall percent for the county went up 6.4%, and the program only went up 4.6%. But over the course of the last year, our property values, our total insured values, increased by 14.3%, and payroll went up about 11, almost 12%, and there was a slight increase in employees and vehicles. And so the overall increase was just an extra 2.3%. The program has expanded tremendously, and I'm going to let Alan address that, but by and large, it was all reasonable. Everything is well covered. All of these landmarks are well covered. The county is well covered, and I'm certainly open to any questions you might have. Alan?
Thank you, Carol. For the record, I'm Alan Kelt, the Chief Financial Officer for Pool Pact. By way of background, I've served as a Chief Financial Officer for local government in Nevada for over 25 years, and I bring that experience. And in that capacity, I've had the opportunity to work with Hugh and Pat over the years. And Hugh and Pat have been instrumental in their involvement in Pool Pact. As a matter of fact, your local agent many years ago went over to London to help negotiate with the syndicates the property renewal coverage. Carol Ingalls was there representing Pool Pack, representing Story County, representing all her clients, and helped build long-term relationships that the pool has enjoyed working with those markets. We talked about the natural disasters and the overall increase of property rates in the marketplace that went up 25%. Our increase this past year as it relates to property was only 12.5%. A national big box store, their rates actually went up 50%. So, you know, working together and having a dedicated staff provides benefits. We are Pool Pact. And as this handout shows, I want to talk about the organizational structure, the financial protection, and the risk management services. The members in Story County has been a very active member. It's the center of what Pool Pact is all about within our organizational structure. We provide property liability, casualty insurance. We have an insurance captive. We provide workers' comp, and we provide risk management services. All of this is provided within a financial protection program. Allows local governments, cities, counties, school districts, hospitals, GIDs come together, pool together to get high levels of limits to protect the communities in which we serve. As I stand here at the Comstock in the Historic District, knowing that the level of earthquake and flood coverage that we have available on these historical structures by pooling together is made affordable by all the members coming together. If you were to have to go out and get that coverage separately and maintain the low-level deductible that you have on your property at $5,000 versus 10% of the insured values, it would cost a significantly greater amount. We have the abilities within our program to provide these coverages, provide interactive claim management, work with actuaries, the underwriters in which to get favorable pricing, if you will, group pricing, as all of those pooling together. So we got your back at Pool Pack. We got your six different types of risk management services that we offer all our members. And the good news is you folks have been taking advantage of those. We have loss control services that help and assist safety committees, things to help the community, help, doing playground inspections, doing swimming pool inspections, doing different loss control things. We have law enforcement training that is out there and available. We have a cardiac wellness program for police and fire, one of the state-of-the-art programs within the United States. We offer HR services, and the HR services director, Stacy Norvith, is your representative. You folks are actively involved in taking advantage of those HR services and programs available. We appreciate that because by working together, taking advantage of these services, we help mitigate claims that take place. One of the things that the pool is working on doing is expanding our e-learning so that the employees can have access to learning at the computer, logging on to the system, working with the HR in Austin, where people can assign classes, can take those during their day, when they have that open block, that 20, 30 minutes available to them, they can log on, get those trainings. We've brought staff on. We can customize that training to meet the specific needs. So if there's something the Story County wants specifically targeted for their employees, we can work with Mike Van Houten in the Carson City office to develop that training that you folks need. We have health and wellness training under the workers' comp. We have a nurse triage 24/7, 365 that helps non-life-threatening injured worker program. We provide cybersecurity to the membership and coverage for that. So working together, we achieve a lot of things at Pool Pact. And again, we are all members of Pool Pact. And we thank you for your participation. We thank you for your business. And we're there to help meet your needs. And it's your innovative ideas that help us as we move forward into the future. Again, I'd like to thank Pat and Hugh for their active involvement in Pool Pact. I have a couple of Hilt carriers down in my car. I'll bring those up to provide those to you folks for your EMS or your sheriff's office. What that does is that helps allow folks to carry people, in an emergency situation. Obviously it doesn't replace an ambulance, but if it's a hard-to spot, they have to carry somebody up part of a mountain, they can go ahead and use those devices. One last thing that I'd like you to put on your calendar to consider attending is our strategic planning workshop that we're going to hold up at South Lake Tahoe. It's going to be September 20th and 21st, Thursday, greater part of Thursday, half day on Friday. And it's an opportunity as we work on succession planning, not only for the organizations within Pool and where we see the pool in the future, also within the executive committee and board members within Pool. We're looking at bringing in a nationally recognized speaker to assist us in that process. So we definitely encourage members to take advantage of that. If the finances prohibit you from attending that, we do provide educational training grants, up to five of those for $2,000 apiece, that allows folks to go to specialized training. And I want to recognize you guys for taking advantage of some of the loss control grants. You've taken over advantage of two different grants, collecting nearly over $52,000 to invest in programs here for Story County that helps mitigate and reduce claims. So that's a quick overview of our organization. And again, thank you. We are collectively Pool Pact, and we're providing many different risk management services in addition to the financial assurance or the insurance part of the program. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Great, Alan. Yeah, so as Carol indicated, that our insured values have gone up significantly, but our premiums didn't go up in tandem with it. They kind of lack behind, so that sounds like it's a good...
You're blessed. Schools have not seen they've seen a significantly greater rate of increase because the insurance related to total insured values, property values, generally went up 12.5%. Okay. There's factors that go into the allocation of the premium. Those include your deductibles, your claims experience. All of that gets factored in. So the fact that if you've seen a significant increase in your total insured values and your rate hasn't went up at least 12.5%, that's a result of positive things that you have done within your organization. And the fact that your increase is less than 7% reflects that. And,
okay, so if I'm looking, if I'm reading the chart correctly, it looks like our losses that we've incurred have dropped dramatically in the last year compared to the year before. But pretty much it's looks like it's on average for what the normal losses are on an average year.
Yeah, so, you know, as you look at that chart, you know, going back to 2002 to 2017, you've had 2 years of, if you will, of shock losses, two large losses. And then throughout that, your losses, I think, would be what I would call within a relevant range. So if you turn to the next the page or the chart prior to that, it talks several prior to, that looks at the overall cost of your program. And it's called, that chart is the NPAIP total program cost. And what's neat about that is one of the things that I've done in the renewals is that I take the current year proposal and then I put a piece of paper, and over the last several years, there were 4 years in which your rates were higher than what they are today. Yes, your rates have went up the last couple of years as your total insured values have went up, your payrolls went up, those things that Carol has talked about. But the good news is that your claims, other than those couple of shock ones, you're doing an effective job of risk management to keep those minimized. And I think, in part, obviously, it's the outstanding employees that you have and taking advantage of the programs and using those available resources to help mitigate or prevent claims from happening in the first place. And we appreciate that, and you benefit from that as well as an entity.
Well. Well, the reason I can ask questions like this is because I took your public finance class last year.
I'm sorry.
Commissioners, do you have any other questions?
Can I chime in?
Yeah.
A couple of items of note here that I want to thank the pool, Alan and Carol. Alan specifically mentioned cybersecurity. And when you have 20 emails in your inbox from a gentleman whose title is Director of Information Security and Threat Intelligence from a national company that's working with you. Tony just recently completed our cyber audit. We're in the process now of reviewing it with him and developing action plans. I'm also pleased to say that there were no smoking guns out there, that our IT director, who I wish was still here, has been doing a very good job, but there are always things that you can do to improve and tighten your security, and that was brought to us as part of our participation with the pool. Certainly one of the most thorough external audit analysis that I think I've ever seen. And the other thing, you know, we focus, as you did, Mr. Chairman, on, you know, how much is our premium going up? How much is our premium? Those are all very important things. But I also, in my experiences of dealing with insurance companies, both personal, professional, and professional with the county, a lot of it is also what happens with claim settlement. And I want to call out an individual who hardly ever gets positive recognition, but that's Donna Squires at ASC and the process. You know, the pool obviously picks our third-party claims administrator. But if you go back, and it'll probably show as a blip on the radar screen, I think, when we look at 2018. But we had a lot of property damage in the 2017-18 to our buildings from the storms of early 2017 that we're just now completing. You heard Mike report on that earlier. I got to tell you, a lot of, trying to find a better word than to say chicken or something, but a lot of picky, cheapskate insurance settlers would probably tell you that if you had 17 different incidents, that you would have 17 deductibles. Keeping in mind that years ago, we made the conscious decision to move away from, I think, a $250 deductible, as I recall, to a $5,000 deductible for primarily for common sense in one respect, but also for policy amount control. I'm not coming up with the right word, but thank you.
But we made that common sense thing. So if you have 17 events, that early winter process of both lots of snow and lots and lots and lots of rain could have cost us an awful lot of money in our deductible alone. We paid one $5,000 deductible for everything, and I think that's extraordinary from any insurance carrier. And then second off, we're able even to work with ASC to say, we know we've got problems. If half the roof on this building was replaced because it was never put on correctly, odds are the other half is bad too. We just didn't sustain any damage. So we're working with ASC to see if we can do some preventative work at the same time. So hats off to everybody involved in the process. It's an organization and a process that I'm very proud to be a part of in a limited way. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Witten. If I could, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, talk about that side roof for just a second. The pool is investing in Story County between $30,000 and $50,000 to do that assessment. In addition to that, we've increased the cyber coverage from $2 million to $3 million without doing a cost allocation to the membership. So why do we invest $30,000, $50,000 in one entity? And as a matter of fact, we're not doing it to one entity. We're doing it to a lot of folks. And we're also providing $500,000 of privacy response expense coverage if there was a cyber breach or a data breach, because we want to prevent those from happening. Okay. So many entities, I think there's 12 different entities this past year that are going through that cyber assessment, and we are so proud of the groups. The IT is in better, many of them are in better shape than what was anticipated, and those are working with Tony, Mr. Rucci, to shore up those gaps so that we don't have to pay out, we don't want to pay out those cyber claims and hack attacks and those types of things. And we appreciate, you know, working with Tony, working with your staff, and we've received a lot of positive feedback working with the IT folks. At first, they're very hesitant. And then they welcome him, and they work cooperatively to fix any potential loopholes into the system or vulnerabilities so that we don't have to have claims and you don't have privacy issues.
Just as a final note, I forgot to mention the fact that as a member of A&H Insurance, I've rejoined them in a consulting capacity, but also as the public entity municipality coordinator. And in doing that, we are doing our best to make sure that you continue to receive consistent service, consistent response, and that we are available to answer any questions or address any problems or create, you know, one of the biggest things that comes around this time of year is with all the sub-entities are certificates. Everybody wants a certificate proving that you have insurance, and now we have the ability to get those out. It won't just fall upon me, but it falls upon support staff as well. So we've shored up our program to make it stronger to be available and more accessible for you. And I'm proud of that affiliation, and if anyone has questions, please don't hesitate to contact us.
Did you want to introduce?
Thank you. And I do want to introduce Brad Pierce. Brad Pierce, go back too far. We started in 1980, but he is the chairman of A&H Insurance. And A&H Insurance now has offices in Reno, Fernley, Winnemucca, and now we've opened one in Yarrington. We represent 31 members, including Story County, and we are determined and we are very proud to be part of this program. We will do everything we can to have our staff trained to respond and to work with the department heads and to work with Pool Pack so that we can provide a seamless operation.
Very good. Okay, this is an action item, and so we will go ahead and take any public comment. Anyone would like to comment on this, the county's insurance? Okay. Okay. I was hoping that Mr. Pierce was going to be at the podium, because as I got over to the page with the invoice on here, I wanted to ask him if if this was the amount we pay, or if it was the distance to the sun. So I only say that because I've known Mr. Pierce for about 40 years. All right, can we get a motion to approve this?
Before I make a motion, I have a disclosure. I'll disclose that my wife, Patricia McGuffey, is employed as an account manager for A&H Insurance Incorporated, but does not receive any monetary gain or incentives related to this renewal proposal.
Okay, thanks, Jared.
So I'll make a motion to accept the renewal proposal from Nevada Public Agency Insurance Pool, known as Pool, and approve for payment from fiscal year 2018 to 2019 funds.
Okay. Okay, motion and a second to approve the proposal. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We are Pool Pack.
Thanks, Alan.
I know where to find you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good job.
Next up, we have item 11. This is discussion and possible action. Authorize the county manager to approve a contract with the United States Geological Survey, the USGS, up to $30,000 for the voluntary and limited monitoring of groundwater levels and quality, aquifer connections, and other geotechnical matters in the Virginia City Highlands, Highland Ranches, and Virginia Ranches area of Story County during the 2018-19 fiscal year. This is a continuation of the prior year contract for this purpose. Good morning.
Good morning, Commission. David Smith with the U.S. Geological Survey. I'm a hydrologist in Carson City. So I'd like to keep this to a summary, so I don't have a formal presentation today, but an update on what we've accomplished for this first year. And this is kind of a shortened summary of the information that we gave to a planning commission meeting with Austin Osborne on May 10th to the community in the Virginia City Highlands. So this is just a brief overview of what we found so far. So, and again, the reason why to follow up with some people in the audience who may not know that the study is going on, that the USGS, when we were reviewing some data, we found a couple wells that had substantial declines in groundwater levels in the Virginia City Highlands. And then paired with that, we found a large number, at least 30% of wells in one section, were either deepened or replaced, representing a substantial increase for costs to homeowners in the area. Another concern was that Virginia City Highlands were one-third of the way developed. There's roughly 600-700 homes, and potentially that number could grow up to around 1,800, if correct there. So with this, we went to Austin, and we discussed the details and got together a project that would look at, you know, we need to first understand the problem, identify where the groundwater level declines are happening. Is this across the board in the highlands, or is it associated with 1 acre, 10 acre, or 40 acre parcels? Can we separate those issues? And with that, we have the accomplishments that we're trying to develop a groundwater network to evaluate water level trends in the area and identify those declines, then develop a water table map and a water level change map so we can identify the areas and report those where the declines are happening. Then also characterize the fractured rock, fractured volcanic rock aquifer system, and also estimate recharge potential from Lustown Creek. So for our year one accomplishments, we established a groundwater monitoring network. And overall, we visited about 62 different homes. That's almost 10% of the people in the highlands. And we originally proposed 10 to 15 homes for this network. And we realized right away with the water levels that we were seeing that this was not enough, and we increased that number to 55 that are currently in our network. Of those wells, 40 wells are in the 1 acre parcels, 14 are in the 10 acre parcels, and then 40 acres we only have one volunteer. At the most recent meeting with the Planning Commission, a gentleman representing the 40s mentioned that he would like to become part of that network, so our next quarterly run we're going to add his well to the network. We also added instruments that continuously monitor water level trends, and that's to look at the timing of recharge, look at areas that are potentially close to Lustown Creek, and when do we see that signal or increase in water levels in the groundwater flow paths. We also measured the flow in Lestown Creek. On March 22nd, I measured a peak of a record, at least so far, of 75 cubic feet per second during the rain on snow event that occurred. We've also collected survey-grade differential GPS at all of our well measuring points. This will help us to stitch together and create a surface and compare that to the 1984 surface. Then I also participated in a domestic well drill to collect samples from and kind of confirm the logs with the original well driller's report. So some of the conclusions from the first year, what we've seen. We originally had the largest decline of 165 feet from when a well was drilled from 1997 to 2016. We found a well that was drilled in 2000, and from 2000 to 2018 declined 205 feet, which is a substantial decline. Overall, some statistics for the parcel sizes. In the 1 acres, they are declining the most over this winter period, where you would expect most of the potential precipitation to happen and increase the water levels. During that period, we saw a decline of roughly half a foot average for the 1 acre parcels, but the greatest decline was 10 feet. In the 10-acre parcels, we saw a slightly less decline, around 0.4 feet, and in the 40-acre parcels, there was no decline, roughly no change in the 40-acre parcel that we're measuring so far, and we have about 3 measurements. Overall, during the winter period, this is when you expect most wells to be increasing during that time with the with recharge and precipitation. We see about a 50-50 split of wells increasing and wells decreasing. Wells that are increasing and stable water levels are generally found in the lower part of the highlands, closer to the fire station and the 10-acre parcels in that area. We've confirmed that Lestown Creek is a losing stream, and so that provides recharge to the groundwater aquifer system. Preliminary data suggests that water levels are continuing to decline and that there are identifiable areas. This will get on to the next year's task where we develop that map to produce it and be able to show everyone. Roughly, we're 20% done with the project currently, but there's still very highly varied water levels throughout the highlands, and so having that additional year of data will mean a lot to understanding the aquifer system. All the data we collect is available online, and at the Planning Commission meeting, we went over on how to access this data so people are aware. Transparency with the federal government is always a good thing if it can happen. And then we've also attached or made available our presentations on the Story County's website. So the plans for year two is to continue this monitoring effort with groundwater levels, precipitation, flow in Lestown Creek, and quantify losses to the system. Overall, develop a water table map and water level change map. The requested funding is similar, slightly less, I think a couple $100 less than the previous year, at $25,700 with a 50-50 match from the U.S. Geological Survey as well. So with that, I'd like to open the floor to any questions the commission or the public might have. And Austin, did you want to mention anything? Okay. And go from there. So.
You want to start since that's your neighborhood?
Yes, first I'd like to thank you for bringing your information to the Highlands Planning Commission meeting in the Highlands. It has a lot of interest, especially during the drought. People starting to panic. We're losing a few wells here and there, and people notice the water quality's gotten worse and stuff like that. So, yes, it's I think it's a well worth project to kind of monitor this and see what our future might bear. So, again, I thank you for the job you're doing.
Thank you.
Okay. Les, any question?
I agree totally with Jack. Thank you.
David, do you guys intend on increasing the number of houses that you monitor?
Sorry, can you say that again?
Do you plan on increasing the number of houses that you're going to monitor the wells?
And so what we've told people is, we've got a pretty good distribution with volunteers. And, people came to us asking for us to monitor their wells. There's some areas where we'd like to increase that coverage. And so if there is an area where we're missing data, we'll definitely add people. Most likely, there's a well nearby that we can use to kind of infer what's going on with some wells. So what we've said is we'll collect one measurement at least to let you know where you're at, but there's the chance that, it might be redundant data at this point. So 55 is a substantial number of wells.
Okay, because I've heard that you could have neighbors. One guy, he's got perfect water, and the guy next door doesn't have any.
Exactly, and the water quality conditions vary throughout the highlands, but also the water levels. The 205-foot decline is right next to a well that's only 100 feet deep. So it's really, you know, does that well encounter the fractured volcanic system, and how well does that well produce, too?
Okay. So why don't we go ahead and we'll open up for public comment if anyone has any questions for you or for this board regarding the approval of this. So, anybody in attendance would like to speak? Ms. Clark?
Nicole Bart, Story County resident. I just want to thank the commission for engaging in this study. As a resident of the Highlands and having a 975-foot well, I appreciate that this is being looked at, that this is also being money well spent on that. I may not like what the results are, but I greatly appreciate the effort to at least let us know, you know, at least some of the topography of where the water is and isn't, et cetera. So, again, thank you for that. It helps me to know that David is out there looking at this, even though, you know, I'm still going to have a 975-foot well. Thank you.
Thank you. Some more public comment?
I do.
Go right ahead.
Since USGS is here, I want to temper my other comments about the Federal Highway Works Administration. Some federal agencies bring opportunities that aren't worth it. I think you're reminding me of the 50-50 match speaks volumes as to the commitment that your part of the federal government has, and I thank you for that.
Thank you.
Any other public comment? You know, if I go ahead and get a motion to approve this, it's an agreement or a contract. It's a contract.
Can you say something?
Based on the recommendation by staff, I, County Commissioner Jack McGuffey, authorized the county manager to approve a contract with the United States Geological Survey, USGS, up to $30,000 for the voluntary limited monitoring of groundwater levels and quality, aquifer conditions, and other geotechnical matters in the Virginia City Highlands, Highland Ranches, Virginia Ranches area of Story County during the 2018-19 fiscal year.
Right. Motion, a second?
Second.
A motion and a second. Austin, did you something you wanted to add to that? No? Okay. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. All right. Contract approved. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Smith.
Thank you.
Moving along now, we're going to go to item number 12, this discussion of possible action. This is a request from NDOT to accept the annual work program. So we have the Deputy Director, Mr. Hoffman, here today, and someone else.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, staff. I'm Bill Hoffman, Deputy Director for NDOT, and with me is Murph Glover. Lee could not make it today. He really wanted to be here, but he's talking railroads, which is a big deal. So he's at a railroad meeting. But anyway, again, I'm Bill Hoffman, Deputy Director for NDOT. We've got some information that I'd like to share, not a long presentation, but I think information that that you all will very much find interesting, especially with all the agenda items that we've had before me. Transportation fits right in there with insurance and water infrastructure and things like that. Three things that I'd like to start off with, though. Wildlife collisions. So we've done a study. We've been working with the Department of Wildlife and Department of Agriculture for years, at least 7 to 10 years. We've been working with those other agencies in the University of Nevada to study wildlife migration patterns. Where are they crossing? Where are they crossing around roadways that make life very challenging and very unsafe for our traveling public? So what we're doing is we're continuing to work with them. We're building animal crossings or wildlife crossings throughout the state. We've actually designed and incorporated a couple of those into the USA Parkway roadway project that's now open. So we continue to fight this battle against wildlife collisions. It's a big deal throughout the state, and we're working very hard to try to minimize that. The One Nevada plan, we're very excited about that. It's a very dynamic plan that's based on performance. You know, it's a statewide 20-year plan. It's our long-term plan that will talk about rail, that will talk about new infrastructure that's needed, we'll talk about performance and how you do planning from a performance management or performance measure standpoint. So we're excited about the One Nevada plan. And then finally, Interstate 11. I'm sure you've heard about it. We've been holding public meetings north and south from Las Vegas all the way up to Reno and in Carson City, just explaining to the public that this is an important interstate that's being discussed, but there's a very long, long process involved, which is, you know, environmental work that needs to be done. There's just a lot of work on the front end. So when you guys hear Interstate 11, there is a piece of it that is open in Las Vegas. That's the Boulder City Bypass Project. Actually, our portion is open. I think both of those will be opening, I think, the first part of July. So the first part of Interstate 11 will open this summer, but getting new roadways built, I mean, those were getting new roadways built all the way up through Nevada will take a while, but we're trying to explain that and trying to let everyone know where we're at with that, with the schedule. And I think we've had a lot of progress and made a lot of headway with folks that we're thinking that was going to be tomorrow, and it's really years down the road, but we don't want to be caught behind. So we want to take as much, put as much pressure on that project as we can. So one thing that Murph and Lee have done over the last few years, they've done a fantastic job of really getting in and trying to figure out what the concerns are. We do these tours around the state, and we go meet with every single county in the state. We do that once a year, just like this, where front office executives will come and meet with the county commission in the winter or the January timeframe. Lee and Murph and a lot of safety structures, a lot of NDOT folks come out and meet with your county staff, your manager, Pat, Austin. I know we've come out and met and just tried to figure out what are the concerns. Because we used to build lists. We used to come every year, and this list would be 3,000 lines long, and we wouldn't even know where to start. So these two guys, very smart gentlemen, said, well, why don't we just ask them what the two biggest concerns are and then maybe what the trailing four or five are so that we could really dive in and help you guys try to really make some progress out here instead of just having this blanket list. And this is really paying dividends statewide. It really, really is. We're really making progress. We're really working very hard with the counties. I know the Electric Avenue, that's one of your top concerns. We have been working very closely with our contractor, NV Energy, just about anybody that will take a meeting with us to try to see if we can get that done faster than we originally said. Now, the traffic signal at Electric Avenue, it's under construction now. I will give huge kudos to our district and construction staff and our design staff. They're the ones that came up with the temporary signal solution. So we knew, based on the work that needed to be done in moving utilities, that there was no way we were going to have that done in time based on the promises that we made to you all and the public. So our team scrambled to come up with those temporary signals. I'm very proud of them for doing that because it was getting very dangerous out there. It really was. I took several drives out. I looked myself. And the team came forward and delivered. So I want to commend Story County staff for having an open dialogue with NDOT, and that relationship is strong. And I'm very proud of the relationship that we've stood up with a Pat Story County and Austin. It's a great working relationship. There's a lot going on out here, and I feel very comfortable where we're at with government agencies working so closely together. So Electric Avenue, I'm hoping that permanent signal is installed this summer. We're working as hard as we can. We have the temporary signals out there. Safety concerns at I-80 at the Lockwood Interchange. I know that I received a lot of questions from this board last year on this item, and I personally have been out trying to figure out how we make I-80 between Reno and the Tri-Center safer and less congested. So NDOT has the North Valleys projects that are already on our books because there's massive congestion coming out of the North Valleys towards the Spaghetti Bowl to get out to the Tri-Center. We also have, NDOT's also, its number one priority right now is to try to fix the spaghetti bowl, the interchange, because we need the main hub operating the best that it can before we start adding capacity onto a system-to-system interchange. So we have those two major projects that we're currently working on. I'm working with our project management and our planning staff to see if there's anything we can do out on I-80 between the Tri-Center and Reno. And then we're actually, we're looking a little bit further east to Fernley as well. So we'd like to start looking at that stretch. We're beginning to hear that there are growth opportunities in the Fernley area. And we want to be ahead of these things instead of behind. So if, you know, if there's things that, if there's, you know, things going on out here, strategic planning efforts that you all think NDOT would definitely be able to take a part in and help you all carry the ball down the field a little bit further, we would really, really like to work with you on whatever you have going. And we want to keep this relationship very strong. This is the time where we need to keep it as strong as we can. So the other concerns, since the Electric Avenue signal will be installed hopefully this summer, then we'll be ready to look at the concerns, because we always want to keep your top two concerns so we can make progress on those. So the Lockwood, back to that, there are discussions with contractors and engineers. We're trying to figure out how we can get more lanes out to the Tri-Center. Part of that is going to be looking at the Lockwood interchange. All the interchanges will be looked at along there, because depending on the widening, we may need to change the interchanges. So we're looking very closely at what we need to do on 80 and all of those interchanges out there. And we'll continue to work very closely with looking at growth projections that the county may have for that area. We're very interested in trying to be proactive and jump ahead of these things so the infrastructure is there before the development is there. That's our goal. I know that's tough to do sometimes. In the world of we were talking about federal funding and hoops and hurdles, it's quite a game that we have to play to try to get funding out in with buckets and all that other stuff. So anyway, I'll quit rambling on the concerns. So this is neat. So we, over the last several years, we were getting kind of the same questions. So Seth and Lee said, well, why don't we make these county infographics? Why don't we share with them just a one quick shot, what are all the statistics that the county commissioners normally ask? So with that, and we have some handouts for you, there's infographic. If you wouldn't mind, sir, if I could just pull these out. So these infographics are cool little just info bits that kind of explain. So this one is interesting, and I'm going to apologize greatly on the front end. If you look at the vehicles there, the two trucks, that's based on old data, this census data. So I'll just jump back up to the top. So if you look, so it's all these questions, what we got over the last, few years. So how many, the population in your county, how many registered vehicles there are, and what I was talking about earlier, the commute pattern. And this is based on 2010 data. I would bet that is considerably different if we ran it for 2018, right? So the commuting pattern, what that does is it shows the net movement of your residents. So you can see that there's an inflow commute, an internal commute, and an outflow commute. So you've got 2010, you had 2,872 people commuting into the county. You had 159 commuting within the county, and you had 1,284 people commuting out of the county. And I bet you that's completely opposite right now based on all the traffic numbers I know. But anyway, we also have age of the drivers, which is interesting, I think, for law enforcement and those folks, just to have, a quick check on data like that. The annual vehicle miles traveled, 39,214,000, seems like a lot, but we've got 50, US 50 and some of the other, US A Parkway now. So the vehicle miles traveled, no transit in this county. The road condition, if you look at the two excavators with the hanging, anyway, that's the pavement condition. So we're in a fair pavement condition, which is good. You have 14 bridges in this county. This is the very bottom. You have the total dollars or approximate dollars rounded on how much that we spend in Story County on NDOT's roads. And that I think that's a demarcation that should be made, is that the dollars, the maintenance funds spent by NDOT are on NDOT roadways, or maybe we're helping with matching funds on projects or something like that. But for the most part, I thought that was a really cool graphic that they put together. Just info on, you know, some demographics and other things in your county. The bigger one, we always kind of get asked, okay, how much money does NDOT get, and how much do you spend, and what do you spend it on? And they're really good questions, actually. So between the federal funding, so we get federal funding directly to NDOT. That's about $350 million a year. And then we get $250 million in state highway funds or state gas tax for a total of $600 million. And then if you look down at the state of Nevada logo, kind of has the percentages of how we... So the majority of our dollars that we spend are on projects and capacity projects. So trying to actually prepare for economic development and be out in front of this stuff so that we're not deterring economic development. So in terms of neons, spaghetti bowls, those big projects, those are those. And about $175 million a year is what we spend on capacity projects. About $100 million, almost, you know, more than half of the capacity we spend on resurfacing, restoration, and rehabilitation, also known as our 3R program. And then you get down to infrastructure and resources. So these are some of the smaller program areas under the $80 million. So there's a lot of work we do up at Lake Tahoe in stormwater and hydraulics. There's a lot of bridges that we go out and replace. We help counties replace their county bridges. Freight transportation, we're looking at truck parking and try and expand I-80 to get more trucks through there. Freeway service patrol. So in Reno and Las Vegas, somebody breaks down in a lane, we actually try to help them off the road, get traffic flowing, and get them on their way as fast as possible. And then you just go down through here, and it kind of just, it ends with, you know, special programs, education programs that we have, pedestrian, bicycle, ADA, you know, those programs where we get a lot of mileage out of going out and talking to people. So, anyway, that's that. And then finally, the last infographic is really cool. The one thing I will note is if you go to this, the public, and for good reason, the public thinks that NDOT starts at NDOT and Story County and RTCs. They see the contracts when they're advertised and they go out. But that's at step 8. You look at all of those steps that are before that, you know, going into, you know, our planning database is PLANA, so all the requests, all the issues we have throughout the state, we have a scoping squad that if there's an idea of a project, they'll run out and go look and try to get at least a base estimate for it. Project Development Committee, so they're the ones. There are teams of engineers trying to figure out which projects we need to do next. Environmental review, NEPA, that's all I have to say there, right? preliminary engineering, so we've got to take the environmental work that we do and move it forward, more granularity in the design. And then you have right-of-way. I mean, it takes us 2 years to buy a 2-square-inch postage stamp of somebody else's property. So very complicated processes before the contract advertised, but the biggest point that I wanted to make here is that it leaves 7 steps available for NDOT to work with Story County on trying to do what we think is right for the Story County, for the community. So Okay? In the annual work program, we've got a project to remove and replace barrier rail on SR 439 worth $5 million. So I must, yeah, okay. Yeah, it's on USA Parkway. So I would be happy to take any questions. And if we could get you guys to accept our annual work program, I would greatly appreciate that.
Mr. Hoffman, could we get you to explain a little bit more about the removal and replacement of the barrier rail?
Yeah, so I'm assuming, Seth, how much of a do you have? Yes, OJ, or whomever from the district office. Yeah. You could come up or you could yell it at me. And
I know he has to come up.
Okay.
You've got to get him on the microphone.
Gotcha. Thank you, Richard. So if you wouldn't mind speaking.
Richard Ojevalk, or everybody just calls me OJ. I'm District 2 NDOT traffic engineer, or traffic engineering supervisor. The project that Bill was describing on 439 is that during the course of the design build, a decision was made to put in barrier guardrail, a cable barrier guardrail. And with the opening of the road, we noticed that it was a high propensity to being hit. So that we're replacing it with concrete barrier rail for less maintenance, increased safety. We would just a lot of run-in hits, and I think it's a lot just from people getting used to using the road and starting out, but we figured it would be a good move to just go ahead and replace that.
Perfect.
Pretty expensive do-over.
It's probably, and I would, again, it's Bill Hoffman for the record. There were multiple locations, though. There were several locations of that cable rail.
Yeah.
Several that have been hit.
Right. Right. So, to the cost, it might be multiple sections. Right. And I would also like to say that going back to my comments about I-80, we're doing a five-county transit study. NDOT's doing its own transportation feasibility study because there's talks about La Posada, South Meadows. There's all of these different discussions happening, and we don't know what's real or what's not. So NDOT's just taking the lead, and we're going to try to, you know, swim through all of that and try to make sense out of it and bring forward a strategic plan. So I wanted to make sure I got that on the record as well.
If I may jump on at least one thing that Mr. Hoffman has said, thank you for taking leadership on regional transportation. It's kind of look at Austin. I think as you heard earlier in his staff report, we are rapidly developing, I think, kind of a regional approach with Washoe LTC, Lee Gibson, of course, and his team. But also, we can't do it without NDOT. You know, we find ourselves falling victim sometimes to proposals that say, well, this road, you mentioned South Meadows, classic example. This road is absolutely hypercritical, you know, to help the transportation out to try and relieve pressure on I-80. And then you have the governor's office coming in and rightfully saying, well, our survey shows that 70% of the workers in the industrial park live north of I-80, which then leads us either toward La Posada or widening I-80. And it's a breath of fresh air that I would have expected, and I'm grateful for, to hear that NDOT is definitely wanting to take lead and be a partner and work with us and the RTC and now Fernley and others. So kudos on that. The other one I think that I look forward to, and I guess I want to go back. I think it was our meeting a year ago that you were here at. Mm-hmm. There were a few outstanding issues that I know you and I agreed to sit down and chat through, and I want the board to know that Bill was in my office probably within 30 or 45 days, and we made good traction on several of the things that don't really show up on these lists.
Items
that I think are important to us. We've talked about the mystery still, that they don't make this list because they're not near as important as life safety issues, you know, presumably on Electric Avenue or USA Parkway, you know, or I-80 for that matter at Lockwood. But they're still important, you know, and those are still there. We're still working actively. One of these days I'd like to sit with you and Lee again
We've got some great news on a small project, but a small in NDOT's terms was $1.5 million, you know, that was going to be just removing four of your storm drains
right.
that were killing our sewer treatment plant.
Right, I remember that.
We've got some great news, but we also want to wheel and deal a little bit
okay.
in favor, hopefully, of solving retaining walls at the north end that are still on that sub-list.
Yes, yes. No, we still need to work on the corner house. There's
exactly.
no question. The Seymour property, if I remember correctly, right?
What's that?
The Seymour property?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Great
right.
memory.
Right.
And we think there'll be some new, time has provided us some new solutions, but I think also, you know, I can tell you, I'm pretty sure that NDOT will be very glad to hear of the project that Mike Nevin, Jason Worsbecki, and the team at Ames, actually,
right.
and Jarrett specifically, have been able to craft together to really mediate that drainage issue in a great way.
Well, that's great. That's a true partnership,
so,
really.
If I tantalized you enough, let's get together and sit down and talk again maybe in 30 or 45 days and
Absolutely.
We'll make sure this one gets locked in on leave schedule a little better than you did last year.
Yeah. No, I, like I said, I'll travel anywhere, anytime to sit down and have a conversation as to how to make the highway safer. Honestly, I will do that. So, and I will commend you on the Transportation Commission that seems like it's moving forward, working with RTC. We're very excited to be working with you all on that. That's a huge step. Huge step. And we'd be there to support you lock and step the whole way.
And I know I say this every year. You won't have me around too much longer to say it, but I will tell you again, you know, the partnership with NDOT day in and day out through the District 2 office and through headquarters is incredible. That we're able to sit and work through things. I mean, Pedro is an amazing guy, Pedro being the guy who really, I think, was NDOT's face for USA Parkway, and still is.
Right.
You know, I mean, the temporary light solutions were phenomenal.
Right.
And then Lee's help, we had, again, some issues, I think, turning ingress-egress off of USA Parkway that we needed a few facts. Off of Pittsburgh Circle, in this case, or Pittsburgh Court, whichever one it is.
Right.
And I asked Lee, and I got my answers back within probably a half a day.
Right.
So it's a great partnership. And then I'd always be remiss if we didn't talk about the great partnership that I think we have, you know, on an ongoing basis, even despite staffing and whatnot, with the local maintainer office, too. You know, I think Jason and his crew, prior to that, Mike is, you know, always able to work through having a state highway right through the middle of town, and that's very important to us that we work together.
Yes, definitely. Thank you very much, Pat.
Mm-hmm. Is there any more questions? No? You can open up this any public comment, questions regarding this item? Any none?
Chris.
Thank you.
Come on up, Mr. Thompson. Be prepared to pause if they blow the new whistle, because it's
yes, sir.
In the moment now.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, Mr. County Manager, Mr. Deputy DA, Mr. Comptroller, my name is Chris Thompson, Project Manager for TRI. I just want to echo Mr. Witten's comments. NDOT has been superb to work with, and especially over the last couple years. I just want to highlight a couple things.
No, I forgot what you said.
Mr. Chairman, to highlight a couple things that we've seen on our end. Number one, is NDOT has been fantastic at managing the growth. I think the explosion in the job count at TRI, the explosion in the traffic came a lot faster than anybody could have imagined, and thanks to Mr. Hoffman and thanks to District 2 and the people down there. Managing growth isn't easy. It's not easy on us trying to accommodate the needs of companies coming in, and I know we push District 2 all the time, and we probably are somewhat of a pain. Sometimes in District 2, as hard as we are moving things and trying to get companies done out there, but we appreciate all the effort from District 2. and Mr. Hoffman, especially you, sir, for your involvement. One other item that we have observed is that our companies out there, especially the global tech entities that are coming in with the massive multi-billion-dollar facilities, they get great service, is the best way to put it, not only from District 2, but also from NDOT headquarters down in Carson City. And it's the personal involvement of the NDOT leadership that makes all the difference in the world. They don't get that in other states. You can't get that in California or Illinois or New York. It's really, really special what they do in Carson City. And the last thing that we've seen that really makes a big difference to me is they are truly focused on strategy and on the future and on planning. About once a quarter, someone from NDOT is talking to us about what our projections are, where is the construction going to occur, how many jobs are going to come in, where are they going to be, what do we think on job counts, and they're thinking outside the box on this stuff. So my words don't express adequately how much praise we have for Mr. Hoffman and District 2 and NDOT for all the support they've given us. So thank you, sir. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. All right. Continue on. Any more public comment? Okay. Before I go ahead and ask for a motion to vote on this, perhaps I could ask the Deputy Director if you'd like to commit to NDOT taking possession of 6 North Canyon.
I know that there are ongoing conversations, and I know that we're working with Story County on 6 Mile Canyon. I know it's a... I can't commit. Rudy would kill me if I committed to that.
This is a terrific opportunity.
I give you my word that we will continue to work on a solution that helps the community of Story County with 6 Mile Canyon.
And let's throw in curbs and gutters on C Street, too, just for
fun. Stormwater. We've got to make sure it's stormwater.
There you go. Great. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Hoffman.
Thank you.
Glover, I'll go ahead and get a motion to approve the annual work program for NDOT.
I'll make a motion to accept NDOT's annual work program proposal.
I'll second.
Move to second it to accept NDOT's annual work program. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Bill. Right. Ms. Murphy.
Thank you. Thank you. We'll talk.
Okay. It's good to see you again.
Right. Thank you.
Good to see you again.
Thank you, Lance. Thank you.
Next up on the agenda is item number 13, discussion of possible action, approval of resolution 18-497 per the request by the director of the State of Nevada Department of Business and Industry that the county transfer the amount of $215,227.18 in tax-exempt private activity bond volume cap allocated to the county for the year 2018 for the purpose of assisting in the financing or refinancing of a portion of the cost of improvements to the equipping of a facility to be used for converting municipal solid waste into renewable fuel products located on an approximate 19.4-acre site located at 3600 Peru Drive in the Tahoe-Reno Industrial Center, Story County, Nevada, and or for two improvements to and equipping the facility used for preliminary sorting and processing of municipal solid waste located on an approximately 10-acre site located at 350 Saddle Court in Mustang, Story County, Nevada. The county may transfer such taxes and private activity bond volume cap to the director of the State of Nevada Department of Business and Industry pursuant to Section 348A-.180 of the NAC.
Mr. Chairman, I'll be glad to take this. I want to note the excused absence of one person and the consistent presence of yet another. Jeannie Benedetti from Fulcrum is here yet again today. She has spent so much time in Story County between meetings and also out at the site and out at the feedstock plant on Mustang.
that I honestly believe she's probably not filing California tax returns anymore. She can claim herself as a Story County, Nevada resident. Jeannie, welcome. Absent today, really, with my encouragement, is C.J. Manthe, the Director of Business and Industry. The Business and Industry Group continues to amaze me as to not only wanting to assist marquee projects such as Fulcrum, but consistently coming through and delivering. CJ approached me maybe a little over a month ago and said we're in discussions again with Fulcrum for financing another component, potentially expansions of their project, but we need your help this time again. And it'll be a process very similar to what we followed before, with this one exception that that the legal counsel has cleared me to go ahead and ask for, and that is assigning or transferring our allocated 2018 private activity bond volume cap from Story County to the Department of Business and Industry. To kind of walk you back in time, for several years, but not consistently every year, we get requests most oftentimes from the Nevada Rural Housing Authority to transfer our bond cap. It's something we don't use, and it's something that if most jurisdictions are able to transfer it without any obligation, I'm going to say that 10 times today, incumbent upon the transferring agency, us in this case, if we transfer it, it helps them fund some of their projects. Specifically, this time around, I'm thrilled. NRHA has asked us for a bond cap transfer, and I politely declined, and their deputy director was very understanding because Business and Industry and Fulcrum have come to us and said, okay, we're looking at financing, I believe, Jeannie, in the approximate range of $45 million when I talked to CJ this morning. You know, yeah, your cap is only $227.18, but we think it's symbolic in its support to the efforts. So again, I want to stress this comes at no obligation to the county. It's monies that Hugh and I have talked about that we have no intended use for the calendar year 2018, and it is consistent with past actions of the board. And it is also, I think, consistent with the steps we've done to support both the Fulcrum Project and Business and Industries Department to support them as well through financing this project. So staff's recommendation is to approve Resolution 18-497, and for the record, I will read just the first part of it. Resolution number 18-497, a resolution of the Board of County Commissioners of the County of Story, Nevada, providing for the transfer of the county's 2018 private activity bond volume cap to the Director of the State of Nevada Department of Business and Industry of the State of Nevada. And again, for the record, the resolution further goes on to define the amount as being $215,227.18 without obligation to the county. Okay.
Thanks, Pat. Commissioners, have any questions for Pat on this?
Okay.
Any public comment regarding this item?
Okay. This is the same. We did the same thing last year on this.
And we will have a subsequent steps. CJ and Business and Industry are beginning to develop the director's findings. We anticipate those will come to us, I believe, in early August was the last time frame we had.
Very good. Okay. Once again, I'll ask if there's any public comment. Hearing none, I get a motion to approve this.
I'll make a motion to move for approval Resolution 18-497, providing the transfer of the county's 2018 private activity bond volume cap to the Director of the State of Nevada Department of Business and Industry of the State of Nevada.
All right. I have a motion. I get a second.
Second.
Moved and second to approve Resolution 18-497. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously.
Thank you, Gene.
Thank you.
Next up, Item number 14, discussion of possible action, review and possibly appoint Joe Curtis, Candace Wheeler, Sharon Evans, Sierra Scott, Marshall McBride to sit on the nonprofit board for Piper's Opera House. Mr. Witt. You're taking this? No?
Waiting for Katie. You want me to take it?
Katie, give me. Come on up.
Come on up.
Yeah, we'd like to hear from you.
I wasn't planning on
it. That's okay.
Well, for the record, Katie DeMuth, Virginia City Tourism Commission and Piper's Opera House. So to give a little brief background, the Opera House was purchased by the county in middle of December, and we took over officially as management and marketing of the property, handling coordination of events, weddings, things like that, in January. Over that time, we learned that there is a nonprofit board that is Stan's. It was under the school board. I don't know how they handled meetings, didn't go that deep into it, but we did realize that we would need to maintain the nonprofit board for some grants that were used by the property, some of the covenants, things like that. So over the last couple months, we've been working on creating this nonprofit board. We reached out to various community members that were either involved in the arts, big in the community, had past history with Piper's Opera House, and we came up with a list that was read off. So Marshall McBride, as a county commissioner, we asked him to sit on the board and as a local business owner. Joe Curtis has a lot of history with Piper's Opera House. He actually has gone through the property numerous times since the changing ownership and actually did a nice, it was roughly a two-hour tour with Whitney, our events coordinator, and myself. Candace Wheeler actually stepped up and asked if she could sit on the board as part of the Comstock Historic District board member, and she also runs the Cemetery Foundation. Sherry Nevin is with the county. I reached out to her as she's kind of a pretty expert grant writer, and I think it's going to be someone we need some help with some of those things, just some guidance. And then Sierra Scott is part of the Nevada Arts Council. You might recognize the name. She was our admin for a few months at the VCTC, but she now is their grants administrator. We had reached out to some other people with the Arts Council, hoping to get some off-the-hill guidance with the property, as this is something new for myself and the VCTC, as well as Whitney. So we chose all these above the residents and business owners as allies and proposed board members for the Piper's Opera House programs. And it's going to be a nonprofit entity that will assist us with grants, the marketing, management, kind of overall well-being of the property. Any questions?
No, this is a good idea. No. I think it's a good idea for the county to have a sitting board member on each of the different boards of our nonprofits.
I don't know what you mean by
neither do I.
Darn Siri.
Siri was listening then, right? If you didn't text my messages. Is the comptroller offered his assistance in maybe getting this nonprofit status back squared away from where it was before?
Yeah, we've actually had a couple conversations about it.
Okay, very good.
Mr. Chairman, we've had many conversations about this, actually. This is a great step in the right direction. And with, several years ago, I was out in Eureka and saw their opera house, which was renovated at a considerable amount of money, which is about half the size of ours. I think the opportunity presents itself with the nonprofit board to search for things such as the Harris Foundation, the Pennington Foundation, some of those people that really love the art stuff, and they really like infrastructure of those buildings. So it makes a good fit, and I'm looking forward to participating whenever I'm asked.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Gallagher. Okay.
So I'd like to share. I've already shared this with Sherry Nevin. At the last NACO conference, I went to the Tiger Grants, which was a popular grant. However, it was kind of competitive. you had a better chance of getting a Tiger Grant if you were willing to match a lot of money with it. Well, they're doing away with the Tiger Grants, and they're going with what they call a Build Grant. And actually, the smaller entity that you are, the less likely you'll have to match, or you have to match very little. So that's something that you should probably start looking at to see where we could take advantage of that.
Thank you.
Lance, you anything to add? No? Okay. Is there any public comment regarding this? Hearing none, we're going to get a motion to approve this nonprofit board.
Okay. I'll make a motion to approve the appointment of Joe Curtis, Candace Wheeler, Sherry Nevin, Sierra Scott, and Marshall McBride to sit on the nonprofit board for Piper's Opera House.
I'll second.
Moved and second to approve the board members. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. All right, we have removed item number 15. Thank you, Katie. So next up will be item number 16, this is discussion of possible action. This is to canvass the primary election results held in and for Story County, Nevada on June the 12th, 2018. So. Okay. Is there any public comment regarding this item on the agenda to canvass the primary election results? Okay. As just pointed out by the county clerk, this is just for us to accept these and for them to be placed into the notes. So we can get a motion to go ahead and canvass and accept the primary election results.
As much as I hate to, I'll make a motion to approve the results as submitted.
I'll second.
Moved and second to approve this item. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Okay, next up on our list is going to be item number 17, and we're going to be getting into this in a minute, but why don't we go ahead and take about a 10-minute recess, okay? We've been at this for quite a while.
Yeah, we're going to go talk to the patient.